Hi everyone, and welcome to the VookCast, Australia's Nintendo podcast. I'm Angelo Valdivia, and with me this week are Oliver Brandt.
Hi Angelo, it's great to be back again.
And Chris Button.
Hello, thanks for having me again.
No worries, thanks guys for being here. We're a bit light on news for you this week, but we're still here to discuss the Summer Games Done Quick reshuffle. We'll try to narrow down some of our eShop recommendations amidst the enormous sale currently underway. We'll also talk about whether or not creativity has sold on the Switch. But first, Pokemon Sword and Shield's first DLC expansion, The Isle of Armor, has been dated for June 17. So, as we've been informed, what, about 2 months ago?
Yeah, sounds about
Is that right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. When it got announced, the expansion passes for Pokemon Sword and Shield, both the Isle of Armor and the Crown Tundra, which will be coming later, roughly sometime in spring this year. We were shown at the time that there would be a new fighting Pokemon called Kubfu, which evolves into Urshifu. But I think now in this new trailer that just came out a few days ago, we've been shown off its new Gigantamax forms, which is just like, you know, a Gigantamax Urshifu, basically, which has a single strike style, which is like a fighting or dark type, which is more of an aggressive kind of stance. It's kind of red looking. And then there's the rapid strike style, which is fighting or water type, and has a more of a defensive stance, which is kind of interesting that there are two different versions of a Gigantamax Pokemon here. We've also been shown some new Pokemon forms. We've got Galarian Slowbro, which is obviously the evolved form of Galarian Slowpoke, which makes an appearance in Pokemon Sword and Shield. We've also got Gigantamax Blastoise, Venusaur, Rillaboom, Cinderace, and Inteleon, which look kind of bonkers to me. They look really ridiculous. I'll start opening this up to you guys now. Do you guys have any opinions or thoughts on how some of these Pokemon are looking now?
So we did get like a tiny little hint when it was first announced of like Urshifu having Gigantamax forms. But like I was not expecting them to go the route that they did. They look absolutely incredible. And like I was sort of, I don't know, Kubfu was and Urshifu was supposed to be like legendary Pokemon, and I didn't really sort of get that vibe from them initially, but like, man, they look absolutely incredible now. And like I absolutely love Galarian Slowbro. I love the little sort of Mega Man references. I just think it's such a fantastic thing to see more Galarian Pokemon, which, as I see on the list, we'll get to more of those in a second. But yeah, Galarian Slowbro, absolutely a fan. I think Gigantamax Venusaur looks absolutely ridiculous. I love Venusaur. I love its whole family. It just looks silly. But I'll be excited to see what it's like when it's actually in the game, because, you know, that was my first starter, so it'll be exciting.
See, for me, Blastoise looks absolutely bonkers. I mean, Squirtle was my starter back in Pokemon Red decades ago now, and the fact that it was a turtle with two giant cannons on its back, and now its Gigantamax form is a giant turtle with like these ridiculous machine guns on its back now, it just looks so stupid, but I'm still here for it. How about you, Chris? How do you feel?
Yeah, I love the Gigantamax Blastoise. It looks like it's got a bloody fortress on its back now. It's so badass. I love it. Because the funny thing is I haven't actually delved into the trailer yet, so I've just seen some of the images and just looking at them now and reminding myself of what was shown. That yeah, I totally agree that these new forms are totally wild, and the Venusaur one for some reason. And perhaps internet culture has just melted my brain, but the Gigantamax Venusaur just looks a little bit blazed, so it looks like it's been partaking in the, as the kids would say, the 420. But yeah, that they all look really, really cool. But I think the ones that I'm most excited about are the ones that are incoming, which is next on your sort of news points here, Angelo.
Yeah, so let's get into those. So in the Crown Tundra, from what we can understand, Galarian forms of Zapdos, Articuno, and Moltres will be coming. So as mentioned before, this expansion is the second expansion, which comes in spring later on this year. I'm kind of torn a little bit on this because I'm like, well, hold on a second. Let's just hold our horses. These are legendary Pokemon. They're supposed to be sort of exclusive or native to the Kanto region. We've sort of been told all our lives that legendary Pokemon are supposed to be one version in the entire world, not just within a region. Now, like, you know, there are Galarian versions of these Pokemon, so they're actually, like, you know, I don't know, crossbreeding of some sort, or they are evolving into different strands of evolutions or something. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of confused about this.
I'm curious.
So that's the thing, right?
Yeah, yeah, you go, Ollie.
Like, because, like, this is supposed to be, like, the whole, like, regional variant, so, like, Alolan forms and now Galarian forms, it's supposed to be based on, like, divergent evolution, which, like, as we know, like, happens over, you know, thousands of generations sometimes. But, like, the weird thing about this is that, like, we know that legendary Pokemon can't breed. So, like, how do you get a divergent... Like, how do you get divergent evolution from, like, a species that is, like, incapable of breeding? It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Like, I think the forms look absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit silly to still call them that. Like, Zapdos is no longer an electric type. It doesn't do anything electric, but it's still called Zapdos. And, like, the same is true of, like, Articuno and Moltres. Like, they're not their primary types anymore. I think they look incredible. It's just, like, this, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, like, in the world of Pokemon to have these Pokemon really exist in any way.
What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I think I'm never really one for in-game lore and, you know, adhering to, you know, the sort of wider rules of the games and the worlds that they create, because I'm never too good at picking up on all those things. So I'm just like, oh, a cool-looking bird. Yeah, that's cool. Whereas other people are sort of like, well, hang on, there's only meant to be one of these in the world. What's going on here? And I'm like, oh, birdie. But the I think the way, if I want to delve into this sort of path of discussion, then perhaps the way I would justify it is that with sort of Galarian variants of these Pokemon in sort of this, you know, pseudo UK Pokemon setting where there's all these, you know, Pokemon sort of affected by pollution, or it's all about, you know, energy and sort of, you know, sustainable energy. Because I think, like, the, what is it, the Galarian Weezing or whatever, that's got sort of like the chimney smokes and that sort of thing. So perhaps Zapdos, Articuno and Moltres, maybe these folks, you know, had a trip from Kanto and came over to the Galar region, and they've become polluted, and this is their polluted forms or something, they've taken on too much pollution, and this is what they've become. So there we go. That's just a game theory.
Oh, that got dark. fair enough. We've also been introduced to the new legendary, or one of the new legendaries that will be shown in the game, called, is it Calyrex or Salyrex?
I'm not sure. Calyrex, I think, is probably the closest to what we're going to get into.
Right,
like,
yeah.
They actually tell us.
Yeah, so we've got Calyrex, which is a psychic or grass type, also known as a king Pokemon, which kind of looks like a spiritual deer with this big sort of, I don't know, foliage, sort of leafy kind of crown atop its head. What would you call that?
I mean, to me, it looks like a big old brain. Like, it is supposed to be, like, you know, like an unbloomed flower. I would be very surprised if it didn't get, like, some crazy Gigantamax form where that flower opens up and it shoots beams out of it, because this is Pokemon.
like a Venusaur.
Yeah. But we also have, like, two other new legendary Pokemon that are sort of very deeply tied to Pokemon in the past. So we have, their names are so silly. It's Reggie Alecki and Reggie Drago, which are obviously related to Registeel, Regice, and Regirock, as well as Regigigas. We don't really know much about these, apart from the fact that they exist, and one is a dragon type and the other is electric type, as the names would suggest. I think their designs are amazing. Like, Reggie Alecki is just a big old ball of energy. And Regidrago is a dragon's head, and, like, according to the Pokemon website, apparently, like, Regidrago exists because, like, they wanted to build, like, this like big ass statue of a dragon, but, like, ran out of materials after the head, so they're just like, yeah, whatever, we'll just, like, toss this into a cavern for the rest of time, and now it's a Pokemon.
Wow.
Which, Like, it's super weird, but, like, I kind of dig it.
Isn't that how you make a Trubbish or a Garbodor?
I mean, pretty much, yeah.
Dang.
But I really like the idea of, because, like, we saw in the trailer, in the Crown Tundra, you will be able to, like, reawaken, you know, Regirock, Registeel, Regice, as well as Regigigas. So I think it's really cool to, like, to expand on the story of, like, an earlier region. So, like, we know that, like, these three Pokemon existed, you know, in the Hoenn region, but, like, there's more of the story that hasn't been told yet. And I think it's really interesting to get more of that story in a game that, you know, comes, what is it, like, 18 years after these Pokemon were first introduced. So I'm really excited to see the direction they go with that, because Crown Tundra does look like it's more based on story and exploration. You sort of get the vibe from the trailer that, like, Isle of Armor is more about, like, sort of preparing players for the competitive side of things. Whereas Crown Tundra seems to be much more exploration and story based. So two very different directions for both of the DLCs, but I think the price is maybe a teensy bit high, but, like, it remains to be seen, like, how much content we'll get with each one.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, as you just mentioned, you know, price is a little bit high. $45 but that's for both sets of DLC. So what's that? That's like $22.50 for one. So it's not too bad, I guess. But yeah, it is a little bit pricey when you consider, you know, we haven't really been shown how big the world is or anything like that, or how much gameplay we expect to get out of it. But yeah, currently available for pre-order, comes out in 10 days from today. So, you know, June 17.
And that's just the first expansion, isn't it, that comes out in a week or so's time. I think, as with any sort of speculation on price and whatever, because we haven't gone hands-on, we don't know how much specifically is in it, how much gameplay or how much replayability it's going to add to Sword and Shield. Anything we say is ultimately going to be empty until we get it in our hands. But for those who have been reading Vooks.net, you'll be able to pick it up for 10% off if you go to Big W and get your eShop cards.
From the 18th. So that'll be the day after the DLC comes out, but, like, absolutely go to Big W and get that deal, because, you know.
So, yeah, get $4.50 off.
10%. Yeah.
Yeah. Moving on. So every year the Summer Games Done Quick event happens in the middle of the year around the Northern Hemisphere summertime. It's usually a big event where a lot of high-profile speedrunners come together and they do a whole lot of speedruns for charity, you know, and talking about their process of speed running and how there are communities around sort of like glitching games and finding out new glitches and new ways to break games and things like that for the purpose of speed running. But this year, the event has been, its physical form at least, has been cancelled and will now instead be moving completely online. So the event is usually live streamed anyways, but this time it will be entirely online. There won't really be any in-person gatherings for this event. Obviously, the cancellation comes amid COVID-19 concerns, and the dates will still be in. Oh, sorry, I'm not sure if they've been changed, or they will still be August 16th to 23rd.
Games Done Quick, so Awesome Games Done Quick happens, you know, in the US winter, and then Summer Games Done Quick happens in the US summer. It's a huge event, and they raise so much money for charity.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, in the Vooks Discord, like, people absolutely go off about these things, because, like, obviously, like, speedrunning is something that's sort of pretty closely tied to Nintendo. Like, some of the earliest, you know, speedrunning communities came around Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario 64.
Or even in things like Nintendo powered, like, people would actually, like, submit video recordings or photos of their speedruns and things. Like, even Cliffy B, you know, famous video game developer, was at the top of one of the records, or towards the top of one of the record ladders in an issue or the first issue or something like that of Nintendo Power. So yeah, like you say, it does go back to Nintendo's roots.
Yeah, absolutely. So because of that, there are a lot of Nintendo games on display. And yeah, as I said, in the Discord, people absolutely love these events. You know, it's probably one of the most active times, you know, outside of a major game release, just because people are so excited to see, you know, their favorite Nintendo games just pulled apart. And yeah, I mean, like, obviously it's unfortunate that they can't go ahead with their physical event, because, you know, part of what makes Games Done Quick sort of really special is having that whole gigantic crowd there in the background, and you know, seeing people cheer when a cheering on, trick is pulled off. Like it's like, it might be a little much to say, but like for somebody who's really interested in like speedrunning and stuff like that, it sort of feels like, you know, the Olympics of video games. So, you know, to not have that crowd there, I think it's going to be, it's definitely going to be a change in like the vibe. But, you know, we've got a lot of people who, you know, have a lot of time on their hands now to watch it. So I honestly think that like this could be one of the bigger events and probably raise more money than any previous event. Just because, you know, people are sitting around, they're looking for something to watch. And like this already draws huge numbers on Twitch streams and like huge donations. So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, how it adapts. And I do want to say that like Games Done Quick does do like sort of smaller events throughout the year that are entirely online. So, you know, they've definitely got the technology to do it like down. So I don't think we have to worry about, you know, technical issues or, you know, it being a little bit weird, because they have a lot of practice with these kinds of things. So, yeah, it should be good.
Hmm. Chris, what about you?
Yeah, I don't really have much to add other than sort of, you know, speedrunning. I enjoy, you know, watching a little bit here and there just to see, you know, some of my cherished games like, you know, Banjo-Kazooie, trying to see people glitch through walls and do things I never knew was possible. But I agree that when I've tuned in to some of the Games Done Quick events on Twitch, that, you know, one of my favourite parts is seeing the crowd in the background react to a speedrunner pulling off a particularly difficult manoeuvre, or one that requires, you know, so tightly timed movements, and to see people's reaction to them actually successfully completing that, that is pretty cool. But I think I totally agree with Ollie that this is the sort of event and the sort of community that will thrive, and the success of the event won't be impacted by a move to solely online. It just will, it'll lose some of that atmosphere, but that certainly doesn't detract from the talent and skill on display from the runners themselves.
For sure. And as we mentioned before, you know, Summer Games Done Quick and Awesome Games Done Quick in general, they usually take all sorts of donations for various charities. This year, we'll be going to Doctors Without Borders. So, you know, 100% of donations that are made for the event will go to Doctors Without Borders, which is a very needy cause. Anyone have anything else to add before we move on?
Not really. Just like, you know, if they're feeling that the vibe is, you know, a little bit off, they can always do what the NRL did and just like, you know, pipe some audio of cheers into the background.
A laugh track, cheer track.
Which I think, cool. You know, Twitch sort of does that already anyway, because, you know, they'll just be able to link up crowd noise to a particular, you know, donation notification in Twitch, so that every time someone donates a certain amount that, you know, there'll be a sound effect play anyway. So I'm sure they'll be able to think of something creative there.
For sure. All right, that does news for this fortnight. Hopefully we'll have some more in the between now and the next episode. But going on to our featured topic. So this is something that I've been wondering for a little while now. I think a lot of people are sort of starting to come to this realization as well. But the question I'd like to throw out to you guys is, can we expect any more innovative experiences for Switch? Now, my argument here, the reason for asking this question, is that lately we've been getting quite a lot of remasters of games over the last decade or so, plus a whole bunch of downgraded ports over the last year, and you know, a whole plethora of cross-platform indies, but they usually come out a little while after they've already debuted on another system. So for example, like, you know, for the last gen ports, we've got things like the Bioshock Collection, which just came out, XCOM 2 and Borderlands. So they were all the 2K games that came out about a week and a half ago. We also got the Xenoblade Chronicles remaster. We've got Burnout Paradise remaster coming this week or next week. We had Oddworld Munch's Odyssey, which was an original Xbox launch game, or at least it came out around launch. We also had Tyre the Tasmanian Tiger a little while ago as well. Plus we've got, you know, the wonderful 101 and all these kinds of games. So we've got a lot of remasters and ports. For the downgraded ports, we've had things like The Outer Worlds come out just a couple of days ago. We had Overwatch came out late last year and The Witcher 3. Now, these are all current gen ports that have had to somewhat be downgraded. It, you know, arguably, they've been downgraded to work on the Switch because it's an underpowered system compared to current gen consoles. And then, you know, some of the examples of indies that we've gotten, which have been quite good and well received, but, you know, still, you know, indies nonetheless that more or less have already been on other systems other than something like Moving Out. But, you know, we've got What the Golf and things like that that have also come out. But I just want to ask you guys, how do you feel about this? Do you feel that this isn't a bad thing, or do you feel like, you know, we're still getting a steady stream of games coming at least?
I think the big thing around sort of innovation on a system, when I think of sort of, you know, is a system innovative, or, you know, are the games, you know, sort of showing what the system can innovate, is that in terms of what's, you know, is unique to that particular system that no other system can do. And I think you find, other than, you know, the likes of PlayStation and Xbox in recent years, which sort of go for more power and sort of, you know, trying to, you know, hit 60 frames per second, you know, at 4K, or, you know, trying to make things look better and prettier and run smoother, I think you always find, especially with Nintendo systems, which arguably have, you know, more innovative systems than others in terms of, you know, whether it's motion or 3D or two screens or that sort of thing, that I think you find as time goes on, the games for those systems try to innovate less, because I think sort of closer to a game's, to a console's release, I think that's where you have games where they're the glorified tech demos. So, for example, the Nintendo Switch has, you know, 1-2 Switch, which is testing like the Joy-Con, the HD Rumble, sort of trying to count how many ice cubes are in the glass, that sort of thing. Whereas, you know, over time, some of those things are sort of found to be a little bit of a novelty, or don't innovate or change the game, overall game experience, as much as perhaps, you know, previously thought. So that I think the goal, instead of trying to take advantage of all of the system's unique capabilities, is just about trying to make, you know, the best experience on that platform. And I think the Nintendo Switch, by virtue of its existence and its portability, I think a lot of these ports and remasters, or you know, bringing games back from, you know, other generations or that sort of stuff, the sheer virtue of being able to play them portably or handheld where that has not previously been possible, I think that in itself is an innovation, and is something that's, you know, pretty cool in itself. Because, you know, for example, the 2K games that have just come out, I don't have much interest in playing many of them, even though some of them I haven't played at all. But XCOM 2, which I'm actually currently reviewing, I, you know, haven't played much on PC, but I really enjoyed Mario and Rabbids. So I thought, gee, maybe this is actually going to be a good opportunity for me to actually finally spend some time in the game, because I can take it with me wherever I go and play it like that. So I think from here on in with the Switch, it's just being about to, being about having the choice and the flexibility to play games how we want them and where we want to play them. So I think that in itself is far more innovative than anything PlayStation or Xbox are doing right now, as technically impressive as those platforms are.
Ollie, what about you?
As we're saying, like, this year has been a bit of a quiet one. I think, like, even early this year, like, we started off as the first Nintendo published game was Tokyo Mirage Sessions, which, you know, is a remaster of a last-gen port. And we're seeing a lot of that from Nintendo. And, you know, if these rumors are true about, you know, remasters or remakes of Mario games coming this year, it seems like that's really going to be the theme of the year. And that's not inherently bad. I'm all for, you know, updating older games to be playable and more enjoyable on newer consoles. But it does feel like sort of the spark that made the Switch so exciting in the beginning is dimming just a little bit. As you mentioned, like, we've got downgraded ports like The Outer Worlds you know, came out just a couple days ago and has not been super well received, with most places like Game Explain and Digital Foundry saying that, like, there's a certain point where it's not worth trying to make those work on the Switch, just because, like, the experience that you're getting in the end is just not one that's worth playing. And, like, it is... There are other, like, third parties have always been sort of not super great with Nintendo consoles. And, like, Nintendo handhelds as well have particularly suffered from the lack of third-party releases. But, like, we do have some companies that are at least trying to create unique experiences for the Switch. So, like, we've got Bravely Default 2, which is said to be coming this year, from Square Enix. You know, we had Octopath Traveler, also from Square Enix, in 2018, and that was really fantastic. Obviously, it has also come to PC since, but it was that kind of... I don't think it would have happened without Nintendo putting out a console that allowed that to happen, because, you know, nobody is really interested in a game that has that sort of 2D, 8D, you know, art style, unless, you know, it's coming to Nintendo, because Nintendo is really where sort of that pixel art style sort of, you know, shown at its best. And then what else is there? We have Shin Megami Tensei 5 from Atlus Games. That was, like, literally the second Switch game ever announced, and we've gotten basically no updates on it since, but, like, we know that it's still in development and it's still coming. So, like, there are companies that are trying, but, like, without sort of Nintendo taking the lead this year and showing off, you know, that the Switch is still an exciting and new platform, I think we're going to see a lot of third parties sort of fall on their back foot a little bit and sort of, you know, have the Switch supported just as a sort of token gesture. And I think that's what we've been seeing a lot in, like, sort of this year specifically, but sort of most of last year as well. It was like, we have seen a lot of companies just saying, like, oh yeah, this is also coming to the Switch, but, you know, as we've seen with things like Doom Eternal and The Outer Worlds, like, it comes several months late and in a really poor condition. That's not to say that Doom Eternal is going to be in a poor condition. I'm sure it will be just as good as the original was, but, like, it's not like the original was exactly groundbreaking either. So, you know, it's one of those things where, like, unless Nintendo is actively sort of championing the Switch to be in a position where it can have these unique experiences, we're going to see a lot of developers not bother to bring those experiences. And I think, like, that's where sort of indies kind of shine, because, like, we know that Nintendo has made a lot of deals to have exclusivity for, at least console exclusivity for a lot of indie games. And, like, it's been quite a few months now since we've had an indie showcase, but the last two indie showcases have showed off some, like, really just incredible looking games. So it'll be interesting to see how sort of indies step up to the plate, because with these games that, you know, everybody's already played, so, like, everyone has already played, you know, The Witcher, you know, nobody was really looking to play that. You know, anybody who was interested in playing it had already played it. But, like, indies are sort of stepping up to the plate and doing new and interesting things. And I think as long as Nintendo keeps promoting and pushing those indies forward, I think they'll be in an all right place to show other third parties and perhaps bigger developers that, like, the Switch is a good place for games to be.
Yeah, fair enough. Just on the mention of indies, I think indies is a really interesting subject around the Switch, because, you know, there was an indie presence on the Wii U as well. It had its own, you know, maybe not quite as many as it does now, but it did have its own handful of really popular indie games that came out on the Wii U and the 3DS as well, somewhat. But with the Switch, I mean, I think about some of the more celebrated indies that have come out on the Switch are ones that have also come out on other platforms. So there's nothing really stand out about them being on Switch necessarily, apart from it being a handheld console. So I think of something like Hollow Knight, for example.
Yeah.
It came out a year and a half earlier on PC, and it eventually also came out on other consoles, and is even like free if you have Game Pass on Xbox One. But it, you know, really hit its stride on Switch because it was a lot cheaper when it came out. It was one of the cheaper indies, and it just seemed like, you know, a much more heartier of a meal to consume on that system. What the Golf, it has its own like two-player mode now on the Switch and things. But again, that was a game that debuted on Apple Arcade. It came out on PC beforehand, but it hit its stride on Apple Arcade. That was the game that a lot of people were getting that free month of Apple Arcade to play. They were getting it to play What the Golf.
Yeah.
And now it's like $30 on the Switch. So there are just these weird sort of tangential things that happen with indies on the Switch, despite the fact that they do succeed. You know, some of the bigger ones do succeed there. You know, Cuphead's another one, you know, debuted on Xbox, and it still was really, really popular on the Switch. But yeah, I just think about indies that were exclusive to Switch. The only one that I can really think of that really took off, at least, you know, at first, was Snipperclips. Like, it was published by Nintendo, sure, but it was an indie game that was then picked up by Nintendo and they helped publish it. And that really shows off what the system can do, especially in that time when you've got a new system and you want something that shows it off. But Snipperclips was perfect. You know, each person takes a Joy-Con. You only need the small screen because it's not a big, complicated game. And you just do these little, like, you know, shape puzzles and things, cutting each other up. I think that's, like, one of the most perfect examples of what the Switch can do. And it's a great showcase of an indie that's exclusive to that system.
Yeah. The other one that I will, like, point out, partly because it's a fantastic game and also because, you know, it's Australian, is Golf Story, made by Brisbane developers Sidebar Games. And I think, like, that's another one of those games where, like, you know, it's cheap and it does a really, really good job of showing off sort of what the HD Rumble can do.
Right.
Because, like, anybody who's played that game will know that, like, the HD Rumble, it does things that no other games have really sort of tried to do. Like, it you can hear, like, the whack of the golf ball and it falling into the hole at the end. So, like, yeah, it's another one of those titles where, like, it is exclusive to Switch and it does a really, really good job of showing off particular features. But, yeah, as you said, like, they're you know, few and far between. And yeah, it'll be, it's an interesting situation for sure.
Go on, Chris.
Yeah. Oh, well, I was just thinking that, you know, this topic in general about, you know, innovative experiences for the Switch, in my mind, this has opened a complete Pandora's box because I'm sort of, approached it from a very much a hardware perspective. And hearing both yourself, Angelo, and Ollie sort of have spoken about it from a publishing and development perspective, which I think is certainly a very valid way of looking at it because I think when I think of innovative experiences on Switch, I absolutely agree that Snipperclips and Golf Story, more so Snipperclips because of how tightly ingrained Snipperclips is with the ability to remove the Joy-Con from the original Switch console and sort of, you know, how that ingrains itself in the game experience because just looking in the notes here for the show, Angelo, looking at some standout exclusives for the Switch, such as Breath of the Wild, Snipperclips, Super Mario Odyssey, Mario and Rabbids, Tetris 99, I was about to say Assassin's Creed. I see AC and I think Assassin's Creed, but no, that's Animal Crossing, New Horizons. two very different games, unless there's a very bizarre hybrid on the way, which that'd be
Assassin's Creed, New Horizons. That
would be innovation. But the interesting thing is when I look at that short list of games and I think from the perspective of the Switch, only one of them stands out to me as an innovative experience from a console perspective, and that is Snipperclips. The others, while I do agree that they are standout experiences and wonderful games, I think they strike me as less innovative, more a case of very, very strong on the publishing and development side. So I think while some of their in-game systems, when talking from like genre and in-game sort of structures and approaches, they've innovated on those. But from a console and a platform perspective, I don't think they've necessarily been all that innovative as such beyond what I mentioned earlier about the choice and the ability to play them whether on a TV or in handheld. So, yeah, for me, as I said, this topic has opened Pandora's box for me.
No, fair enough. I mean, the reason why, I'll just run through the reason why I selected those games in particular. I mean, it could be a lot of games. Those were just ones off the top of my head. So with Breath of the Wild, for example, I mean, yes, it was a cross-platform game or cross-generation game, however you want to look at it. But, you know, it did hit it straight on Switch. It was, you know, this huge grand adventure that you could play portably. So it really showed off what the Switch could do from a power perspective. So I thought that was a really important one. Snipperclips, for reasons we've already explained. Mario Odyssey, you know, being the first Mario platformer in such a long time. And its own set of motion controls and things like that. But again, was a huge Mario adventure that was portable. Mario and Rabbids, I thought that was more from a publishing standpoint because it really demonstrated how special a game could be if it was made exclusively for the Switch by another company, by another publisher, by a third party especially. And, you know, it was a third party publisher who was able to use a Nintendo IP, like their most valuable Nintendo IP, and absolutely blew it out of the water. They really, really made something special out of it, and I hope that they'll get to do another one.
That's sort of a success that we've seen with Cadence of Hyrule as well, where they gave, you know, the Zelda, which, you know, arguably their second most valuable IP, to an indie developer, and, you know, the game that we got out of that was just like an absolutely incredible experience.
Absolutely. And with Tetris 99, you know, again, just a really simple idea, a battle royale version of Tetris, which just was like, oh, hey, by the way, it's out now. You can download it. And like, I used it a couple of weeks ago. And like, there are still thousands of people playing that game. It's just so easy to drop into. You know, it's a super tiny game and it's really, really, what's the word? Whatever. It's really, really good. Animal Crossing, the reason why I wanted to bring up Animal Crossing is because people loved the Switch before anyways, you know, it was a really popular system, but I think Animal Crossing just made it normal. It made the Switch like a normal video game console now, like whereas before people was kind of like, you know, it's a Switch, it's a novelty to play in handheld or at home and things like that. But with Animal Crossing, like there are so many people now who are playing that game, and it's just basically become ubiquitous in today's culture, at least, you know, with online culture, like everyone plays Animal Crossing. I see that ABC, like Australian broadcaster, is covering Animal Crossing stories now. They just have casual Animal Crossing stories. That's nuts. Never would have.
And like, it's sort of that thing where like Animal Crossing sort of became the Switch's killer app. Right. So something that we like talk about in like sort of software and hardware platforms before, but like the killer app is the thing that, you know, is what makes that platform ubiquitous.
Absolutely.
And Animal Crossing has absolutely done that. And a part of that is because of timing, you know. And I think we can all recognize that, like, maybe Animal Crossing would not have been the cultural zeitgeist that it is without, you know, the fact that everybody was stuck indoors. But also, like, it, you know, they've been doing this for years. They know exactly how to make a good Animal Crossing game. You know, the fact that it was as successful as it was, it can't just be chalked up to timing, because, you know, they know what they're doing.
But also just in terms of connectivity as well, like when I had New Leaf, like I wasn't really engaging with other players so much. I might have been sharing some things every now and again, but now, like, you know, sure, it's a little bit outdated in the way you can connect with people, but now you can have 8 people on, you can share all these things, you can share screenshots and videos and do all this. So now it's become its own like little social hub as well. It's become almost like a social media platform in a way. So that's one of the reasons why I chose that for innovation. And again, like a lot of these ones are Mario, a lot of these are Nintendo games. Like the innovation is coming out of Nintendo on their own platform, which is what we've seen again and again over generations. And every new generation of Nintendo platform, you know, Nintendo comes out banging the drum saying, oh, yes, we're going to have third parties. Look at all the support we have. And everything comes out within the first year and then that's it. I mean, Ubisoft was there for the Wii U as well. We got like, you know, we got Zombie U. We got the Rayman Legends. We got Child of Light, which, you know, also came to other platforms. But, you know, they did support Wii U in its first year. But again, we don't really have anything with EA. We don't have a Grand Theft Auto. We don't have these other really important series on the Switch. And when the next generation Nintendo console gets announced, I'm sure we'll see support from Ubisoft and maybe a couple of other big third parties. But after the first year or so, it'll probably just die out again. So, yeah, it's just, I don't know. I especially like, thought that I things would like, be a bit different this time.
Unlike the topic of Ubisoft, like, they've experimented a lot with, like, what they can do with sort of the Assassin's Creed series. So I've sort of championed these games for quite some time because I'm such a huge Assassin's Creed fan. But there was this small little series of games that were a spin-off series called Assassin's Creed Chronicles, where it was a side-scrolling sort of stealth game. It was just genuinely a fantastic experience. And I think that's some of the best games in the series. But like, there's no reason that that couldn't be on Switch, and there's no reason that they couldn't expand, you know, sort of that series to be like, you know, a new Switch thing. Because like, obviously we know that, you know, the Switch probably isn't going to run Assassin's Creed Valhalla. It's probably just not going to happen.
Because of like, the loading screen, and it just explodes.
Yeah. So like, why not? Like, why aren't these companies like stepping up to the plate and saying like, hey, you know, we can do this fantastic, you know, 2D representation of these games that like absolutely slaps. Like, why are they not doing that? And like, a part of that is because like, I have to believe that like Nintendo is not really looking for that. Like, they know that they're going to sell consoles on their own games alone. So I sort of have to believe that like Nintendo, you know, isn't reaching out to places like Ubisoft and saying like, hey, make us an Assassin's Creed game. So yeah, it's just, it's a very bizarre time to you know, be primarily a Switch gamer, because you know what's happening this year that we can be excited about. Like, I don't think we have any other announced games. Paper Mario, of course,
next month.
But like, that's it. And if you're not like a fan of Paper Mario, like, what have you got going for you this year? Like, there aren't any major games.
We know that Breath of the Wild 2 is coming sometime, and we would assume that we'd be getting some news about that sometime soon, because this is the E3 period right now. But who knows if we'll actually hear anything more. They announced it last year with a trailer, but that's it.
Yeah. And like, I understand that, like, as we've seen from reports, like, Nintendo has struggled a lot to work from home because they had none of the infrastructure in place. And I think this is something that we've talked about, you know, on the podcast in the past, is that like, they have struggled to get working adapt. From home in place, adapt to what the new normal is. But I think like, hopefully, you know, in the coming weeks and months, we see, a lot more of Nintendo being active, rather than reactive. Because right now they're being reactive, and it's not really doing them any favors. You know, they had Animal Crossing come out, and then, you know, that was wildly successful. So they reacted to that by only focusing on Animal Crossing. And it was only really when, you know, the hype for that started to die down a bit that we got the announcement of, you know, Paper Mario and Origami King. So I'd like to see them, you know, take a step forward and be a little proactive about how they're communicating with their audience and like what experiences we can expect for the Switch going forward.
For sure. Chris, do you have anything before we finish up with this topic?
I think really the only thing I can say, and I think I've mentioned this on a previous Vookcast or perhaps another podcast, but I know, you know, I mean, what is, you know, the typical or standard game? I don't know, but I know I don't necessarily represent, you know, the typical sort of, you know, average sort of video game player, because, you know, I play so much across so many different platforms. But to be perfectly honest, I'm totally fine if Nintendo take their sweet time, don't release anything new for ages, because I've got plenty to catch up on. So I'm more than happy to go through my ever-growing backlog of games.
For sure, yeah. And that's the thing, right? I mean, like, if you have multiple consoles, then I guess you are set. I mean, in the meantime, while there isn't really much coming out of Nintendo, I mean, there's Paper Mario, as we mentioned before, but, you know, there is The Last of Us coming out. What else do we have? We've got a couple other big games coming as well. We've got Disintegration coming out, which looks really cool to me, around the same time. So we do have these other bigger games. We've got The Avengers coming. So
Cyberpunk,
of course. Yeah, so there are these other bigger AAA games coming to other platforms. It's just, interesting that I think that we're just in that while most consoles would go through like a mid-life cycle, like renaissance in a way, like this is where we'd start to really see some really interesting titles come out that do different things, and maybe we'll see their sequel from, you know, their first game in around a launch period of the console. Like where the Switch seems to have done something different and gone through just a little bit of a slump. Like, sure, Animal Crossing is great, but it's the... And then there was Pokemon as well, but again, those are first-party games. Like, they're not games that will sustain, I don't know, the Switch outside of Nintendo's offerings, like, over the next year or so. So,
yeah, it's interesting. And I think you know, I agree with sort of the sort of mid-life cycle sort of renaissance in terms of... I don't think we necessarily saw that with the Wii U, because unfortunately that wasn't quite popular enough for them to really double down and sort of innovate wildly sort of beyond its sort of halfway through its life. But like with the Nintendo Wii, around sort of the midpoint of its life, they brought out the Wii Motion Plus and, right. and brought out a bunch of experiences that, you know, like Wii Sports Resort and Skyward Sword, games that really took advantage of the increased sort of one-to-one ratio of movement that those games relied on. So the Wii definitely did that. The Wii U
But if
didn't.
I can interrupt you for a sec, yeah. There are other like great games that came out from third parties around that time as well. Like there was Mad World, there was The Conduit. You guys remember The Conduit? I still think about that game sometimes. Like, and they did really interesting things with the hardware, despite the fact that it was super underpowered compared to the HD consoles at the time. But, you know, Mad World was in 3D, had a really great art style. The Conduit, the developers, High Voltage, did... They just completely made a new, like, graphical showcase engine for the Wii. Like, there were some interesting things that happened around that time with the platform as well. So, that, yeah, I think that's just kind of strange. Sorry to interrupt you, Chris.
No, I think those are great examples to bring up because, you know, especially with, like, Mad World, you know, with how ultra-violent that thing was and, you know, fully used the motion controls and that sort of stuff to act out some rather interesting actions. but the... I think, you know, as I said, the Wii U didn't necessarily do that out of necessity more than anything, because while there were plenty of fantastic games for the Wii U, I'm not sure that they necessarily innovated from a hardware perspective beyond sort of midway through its life. I cannot actually think of any game beyond Nintendo Land that used the sort of camera in the gamepad. There possibly might have been a few, but I can't think of any.
Yeah, I can't think of any.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
There was a Star Fox, but like the less said about that, the better.
Actually, I will defend Star Fox Zero to my grave. I actually really, really enjoyed that game. And perhaps a discussion for another day, but I actually really, really dug what that did with the gamepad. There was actually a moment in that game I had a real aha moment. I thought, whoa, this is really cool. I'm flying in one direction, holding the gamepad in another, shooting in that direction. And I had sort of a, I think that was sort of my first sort of almost VR experience before I had actually had a VR experience. So I will defend Star Fox Zero until the cows come home.
Fair enough. Yeah, I guess like, I don't know. One of the things that, to sort of wrap up my opinion about all of this, just one of the things that I'm worried about is that Metroid was announced like 2 years ago now, and they did say that they were restarting development and stuff, but I just worry that we've waited an entire generation, two, three generations for a new Metroid game, and it just comes at the end of the life cycle of the Switch, and, you know, it's still just a similar sort of first-person shooter experience. While everyone kind of craps on corruption, I think there are some justified reasons for that. Like, it did use the motion control, it did do some different things with it, but I just worry that something like Metroid Prime, like, it'll sort of return to like a very standard kind of shooter type of thing, and it will sort of lose the innovation that it could have really grabbed onto with the Switch over that lifetime. You know, we start off with hopes and dreams with the Switch, and then we sort of just return back to sort of standard video gaming as we would expect with a first person shooter. So I don't know. Be interesting to see how things go.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of Star Fox.
All right. Let's look on a brighter side of this podcast. Let's move on to games we're playing. I've done quite a lot of talking. Chris, why don't we move on to what you've been playing? You've got XCOM 2 Yes. You had some positive things to say about that before.
I've been playing the XCOM 2 collection on Switch to review for Vooks.net, and with how things are going, I'm hoping to have a review, full review up sometime this week perhaps. And, yeah, I think I joked in the Vooks Slack that it's quite nice to see a Mario and Rabbids inspired game on Nintendo Switch. So it's good that with the innovations from the Switch, they've inspired another tactical game to come to the console.
I love that joke so much. I love it so much.
The thing with XCOM 2 is, I think for the most part, it's a pretty good port, and I think that's mainly by virtue of how good a game it is and how strong it is with its deep layers of tactical action and so many things to factor in and think of in terms of soldier management, in terms of base management, and trying to fight off this alien regime that's taken over the world. But my goodness, it runs rough as guts. It looks pretty rough. There's a lot of that sort of glossy effect in handheld where a lot of textures and visuals aren't super sharp. Even some aspects of the UI, the UI is way too small on in handheld. And yikes. I think more games, especially with accessibility rightfully becoming more of a focus in games wider, you know, in AAA and indie and that sort of stuff, UI scalability is a necessity. And XCOM 2 is another game that shows that, yeah, you got to have UI scalability or some sort of modularity in being able to change and customize how it looks, because I've got pretty good vision, but even I'm struggling in handheld. But in docked, you know, it's not too bad if you're playing on a big TV or a big screen or whatever. But even then, there are, you know, textures that sort of pop in and out or flicker, and, you know, some of the little in-game animations and transitions, they stutter and frame rate drops here and there. But again, by virtue of XCOM 2 being such a great game and by virtue of it being a turn-based game, you can excuse those sort of things, because it runs, it plays, it's, you know, it's functionally fine. But it is a bit rough, but it's too good a game to, you know, say that it's not worth playing on Switch, because, you know, being able to play such a hardcore tactical game on the go, as XCOM 2 is so good. But I think I'll save this discussion for the review, but I will warn anyone, if you're like me and haven't played much XCOM 2, make sure you do some reading beforehand on the DLC that's included and what they change to the game experience, and make sure you're fully informed before playing the game as to what sort of experience you want, because the DLC, which you can turn on or off, or choose to play the game with the expansion added or excluded, it does tangibly change the game in quite a number of ways. And if you're not prepared for that, it will throw you for a loop. So bear that in mind. I will discuss that more in the review. But other than that, I played Ori and the Will of the Wisps on Xbox One. Brilliant game. One of the most gorgeous, beautiful games I've ever seen. So would recommend that. And I've been playing Children of Morta, which is an indie roguelike sort of Diablo dungeon crawler game, and is very good in co-op.
Cool. Could I just ask, with XCOM, have you lost many soldiers along the way?
Well, actually, it's funny you ask, because I have named many of the soldiers after a member of the Vooks team. So there is an A, cool. A Valdivia and an O Brandt. So both of you are still alive. Ollie, last I checked, you did sustain a grave injury, so you were out of action for about a month. So, you're still around, so you're doing okay. But I have Andrew Searles. He died on his first mission. So,
rip.
Sorry, Andrew. I'll have to tag you and let you know. So, but other than that, depending on how poorly some of the missions have gone, I'm allowing myself the luxury of save scumming and reloading the save if something goes terribly pear-shaped.
Fair enough. That's the way to go, I think. It's exactly how I play Fire Emblem, even though I play it on, you know, adult mode.
Mm-hmm.
Ollie, what about you? What have you been playing?
Well, I just published my review for Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition. That came out last Friday. Goodness me, what a game. I spoke a little bit about this after my preview had been published on the last episode. I can now talk about any aspect of it, but I won't, because I genuinely want anybody listening to this who is interested even remotely in the game to go and experience it for yourself. If you tried it on the Wii, it's so much better than the Wii version, just by virtue of you know, looking a bit nicer. I mean, like, look, there's no escaping the fact that it is a Wii game. A lot of the textures in the environments, you know, look like Wii games. But they've done just a fantastic job of making the game sort of more playable than it's ever been before, through UI updates and, you know, quest markers that weren't previously there. And, you know, a 10 to 15 hour epilogue that sort of wraps up a couple of the characters' stories that didn't really get closure before. So yeah, I won't go into it more than that. I will just say, like, honestly, if you're even remotely interested in playing it, pick it up. You know, go to our bargain guide, get a good deal. Yeah, go on.
Can I just ask, so we've been talking a little bit about some of these decade-old ports and things, or remasters that have come over to Switch. With Xenoblade, does it feel like a game? Does it feel more or less the same as what it did on the Wii, like in terms of structure, in terms of gameplay, in terms of pacing, or have they tightened some of those things up? You mentioned UI and some other gameplay things.
So they have tightened things up, like, purely sort of by virtue of, like, being clearer about how a lot of the aspects work in the game. So, like, one of the things that is sort of really frustrating about the game is that, like, if you pick up a side quest, and there are, I think, like, over 500 side quests to do, in the original, you just sort of had to, you know, sort of know what you were doing. So you picked up the side quest, and then you had to sort of, you know, if it says to kill this particular enemy, you had to sort of know what that enemy looked like, you had to know what it was, where it lived, and just sort of remember that and go out into the world. Now, you know, that there's, you know, they have, like, a little line that leads you directly to the enemy that you need to defeat. So it just... there are some battles, and, like, I've spoken in the review quite heavily about casual mode. So casual mode makes battles easier. It doesn't make them easy, because I have died many times, but it does make battles easier. And that alone is going to be cutting out a lot of the grinding that you'd do in a normal playthrough. And I think that, like, it's a game that, like, when I played it originally on the Wii, in 2011, it took me about 110 hours. Like, even accounting for, like, the fact that I already knew, you know, some of the story beats and stuff like that, it took it down to about 50 hours for me, casual mode. So it really does make a huge difference when you're not, like, drawing those battles out, you know, for an hour to defeat a boss. I will say as well that, like, load times are basically non-existent now. So you can fast travel from one side of the world to the other, and it won't take more than a second or two. You know, that's just because, you know, you're not held back by a spinning disc anymore. But yeah, so if you're interested, like, pick it up. It's they've streamlined a lot of stuff, just to sort of take the edge off of, like, you know, a 10-year-old game, because, you know, we know a lot of stuff about game design that we didn't know back then, and they've really incorporated absolutely everything that you could want into the Definitive Edition.
Great.
I've also just transitioning from that, I've also been playing just the demo for 51 Worldwide Games, called Clubhouse Games in the US. I do intend to actually buy it. But right now I've just been playing the demo because, like, goodness me, President, I think, was just the perfect game to, like, get you sucked into 51 Worldwide Games, because like, I don't know if it's actually called like President, if the game that it's based on is called President in real life. I have no idea what it's actually called. But that was a game that I used to play with my uni mates back when I was still studying, and like we would play that for hours. And now like I have it on a handheld console. Like last night I played it for about 2 hours and like literally fell asleep with the Switch in my hand, because like I love this game so much. So I've been playing a lot of the 51 Worldwide Games demo, and like eventually I'll, you know, pull the trigger and buy the full game and see what other games there are outside of President. But right now it's just been President.
I'm trying to find out what President actually is, but I guess I'm intending to get the demo at some point, so I'll just have to fiddle around and find out what it is myself.
It's like a wonderful little card game where you have to get rid of cards. You can do that in like singles or doubles or triples. Sometimes you can do like a sort of straight and get rid of, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Okay.
And then, you know, if you win, you become the president and you get to take good cards from everybody else. But then, like, if somebody gets rid of their cards first in the next round, it's like an automatic fourth place for the president, because they've been, you know, overthrown. So it's like this it's really tactical and quite fun.
I'm just seeing a Wikipedia entry for it here. I've heard the game Asshole. Apparently it is that.
Yes,
I've heard of that card game. And apparently, yeah, President is a westernized version of a Japanese card game named Daihinmin. Daihinmin? So
there you go.
There we go. The more you know. Sorry.
But yeah, so I don't know. Try out the World of Games demo. It is a bit difficult to find on the eShop. I think somebody in Avvocsack was saying that they were looking around for 10 minutes to try and find the where the you know standalone, you know, free 4 games version of it is. It is actually on the full Worldwide Games eShop page. You just have to click the download demo. Because it is not clear about that at all.
Cool.
But yeah, go pick it up. We also have a review for that, I think. Went out a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, so my turn. So I've been playing the Bioshock Collection, which also came out about a week and a half ago. I'm doing that for the review for the site. I always forget. So I've played through the first Bioshock maybe 3 or 4 times, you know, the most recent time being like a few days ago. And I always forget how friggin' long that game is. Like, Bioshock is just a deceptively long game. It's fantastic, but it is a deceptively long game, which has kind of eaten away a lot of my time. So I'm currently playing through Minerva's Den, which is the DLC from Bioshock 2, which I've never actually played. And then I'll be getting into playing some of Bioshock Infinite. I've already played through the main games before and stuff, so I'll be able to formulate my opinion on the reviews for that, but I'll definitely want to test it out, see how it runs. It's kind of funny because it's quite the opposite of what you were saying, Chris. Like, this game actually runs really very well on the Switch. It's super slick, you know, looks fantastic. Probably looks a little better than it did on the Xbox 360 and PS3 given time, but perhaps not as good as the current gen PS4 and Xbox One, only because, you know, there are some aliasing issues in there, like, you know, some jaggies and things like that around the place. But apart from that, looks really, really cool. The biggest issue for me is just the price. I mean, for all 3 games in the collection, it's $90 on the eShop. To buy them separately is $35. While that might be a pretty decent deal, you know, it's not terrible for something like Bioshock Infinite, which comes with its 2 DLC, or Bioshock 2, which comes with Minerva's Den, which is like a smaller story of its own as well. For Bioshock 1, I just think that's a bit too much. I mean, the game's well over a decade at this point. You can get the entire collection on the PlayStation Store at the moment for, I think it's like $12 or $15 or something like that.
Yeah.
And that, you know, obviously comes with trophies and things like that as well on the platform. But as Chris mentioned before the show as well, it was free on PlayStation Plus earlier this year. So if you want to get it on a different system, like, you absolutely can for a significant saving. But if you really want it on the go, I mean, these are still fantastic. The games run flawlessly, apart from one glitch that I experienced in the first game, which set me back about an hour and a half, which is really annoying. But yeah, I mean, if price is no issue for you, then I highly recommend it. My review, I'm planning on writing my review tomorrow, so it should be up by about Tuesday, roughly around the same time this episode goes out. But yeah, really, really good. I've also been playing some Pokemon Shield, just because it's been so long and I never actually finished the main game, and all this talk about the the new expansion pass has got me a little bit hyped. I think I mentioned last podcast or a podcast before that, you know, that I wasn't quite so interested in the DLC, but I think now I'm kind of keen for it. But I might hold off from getting it immediately because there are just so many games coming out in the next couple of weeks. I've also gone back to Overwatch on PC, just because I just on a whim was like, you know what, I'm in the mood for a PC shooter. Don't really want to play something with a story. I just want to kind of veg out. And I jumped on Overwatch and really dig playing it. I've been playing a lot as Lucio. Really dig him. It's kind of
absolutely my favorite character.
I love him so much.
You know, speeding so in, good. Booping someone off the edge, and then like healing the whole team. It's like, oh, that's exactly what I play for.
All the while, you're just playing these sweet jams while it's happening. Yeah, I'm super down with Lucio. I keep wanting to call him DJ, but this is not Street Fighter. So that's all I've been doing. Let's quickly move into our recommendations. So, unlike most other weeks, there is an enormous sale going on at the moment. By our count, there were over 1,000 sales at the moment, with about 500 new ones or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah, so there were 1,036 sales when we compiled our list, and a few more have gone on sale since then. List isn't even like 100% complete right now. Over 1,036 sales, and about 520 of them or so like new sales, and there are some huge games in there.
Yeah, so the Capcom sale is still ongoing, so that still has another like week and a half, right? Like finishing around the 19th or something. Yeah, so we've still got that one going, so that's been going for a little while. But let's talk about our recommendations. Ollie, you can start us off. What's your recommendation?
So I would recommend, I have said this every single time this comes up on sale, I recommend it. Assassin's Creed 3 is like $26 right now. It's 63% off. It's a criminally underrated game with a slow start. But if you get past that slow start, I think there's a lot of really interesting things. Especially, you know, there's a lot of stuff that gets addressed that is very relevant to the world right now. So absolutely check out Assassin's Creed 3. It's sort of sister game, the Rebel Collection, which comes with Assassin's Creed 4, Black Flag, and Assassin's Creed Rogue. Is also 30% off right now at like just under $60. Not as good a deal, but you get like two full-size games. Still worth picking up. I will also give a huge shout out to the Australian developed Assault Android Cactus, which is 50% off for $15. It is a absolutely mind-blowing twin stick shooter, and the Switch version is the definitive version of it. I think they've like ported some of the changes that they made for the Switch version over to other consoles now, but like it's just so good. And like that's coming from someone who doesn't really enjoy twin stick shooters all that much.
Good gosh, Ollie, how can you say that?
Well, there's like every now and then, like one will come out, like Geometry Wars, or like Neuro Voider was something that I played early on the Switch's life that like I really enjoyed, but like as a whole, not really that big on them. But and Assault Android Cactus is absolutely incredible and Australian made, so you know, get on that. And also Diablo 3, it's the only sort of like huge AAA game that I'm going to mention here. Is like $45 right now. I think that's like 50% off. The Switch port of Diablo 3 is just absolutely flawless. Even if you pick like a crazy spellcaster or like, you know, a witch doctor with, you know, 500 summons, it does not drop a frame. It's just, in my opinion, the best way to play Diablo 3. So those are my recommendations. But like seriously, look through the whole list. There's so many. Or just even open up the eShop and look through like the top 100 or so in the sales tab, because like you're bound to find something that you like at a very decent price.
Diablo 3, that comes with all the DLC, right? That's like the definitive
edition. It has absolutely everything. Cool. And I think
a Ganondorf outfit, doesn't it?
It does. It comes with a Ganondorf outfit, and it is very cool.
That's awesome. Chris, what are your recommendations?
Yeah, normally I'll, you know, bring together a bunch of, you know, really cheap, you know, overlooked indies and that sort of stuff. But this time I've gone with 2 Point Hospital, which is one that I reviewed for Vooks only a couple of months ago. And that's 30% off, which brings it to $42. And the reason I recommend that is just because of how good a port it is. And, you know, because, you know, it's, you know, the hospital sort of management sort of genre sort of thing, you know, very, very niche, but very well done and has a wicked sense of humor. And you will absolutely get $42 worth of game and then, you know, and then plenty out of that. So, yeah, would absolutely recommend Two Point Hospital.
Awesome. For me, my recommendations are Yoku's Island Express. Anytime that game is on sale, I will absolutely recommend it. It is an absolute banger of an indie. It's a side-scrolling sort of platformer with a really delicious pinball twist. The whole world just has these little pinball ramps that you just act as flippers that you would get in a pinball machine. And you're this little dung beetle type thing who's just rolling around this ball and you're just flipping it all around the world and just going on this little crazy adventure, meeting all sorts of interesting characters. It's absolutely beautiful. It's really
great. You have a dedicated party horn button.
You do. I always forget that. Why do I forget that? You do have a little party horn button. If nothing else, get it for that.
Yes.
That is $9.20 on the eShop, down 66%. So, it's down to a third of its price. It's really, really good. Then there's also Transistor, which is currently $4.80 on the eShop, which is 80% off, which is a really, really great game. When I first played it, it was on the PS4 as part of PlayStation Plus. It's made by the same people who did Bastion. It's that sort of isometric, beautiful art style kind of game. I kind of forget the story itself. It's something to do with... it's a singer or someone like that, an opera singer who loses her voice. And the entire world is this kind of like cyberpunk kind of aesthetic where the whole city kind of looks like a transistor grid, like a motherboard or something like that. It has these beautiful sort of computer science-y type of aesthetic to it. Ollie knows a little bit more about it. Do you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
It is about an opera singer who has had her voice stolen. She comes into contact with a magical sword, which, is a little bit weird, but if you played Bastion, you kind of know that, things get a little bit weird. But it is just, it is an absolutely beautiful game, visually and, sort of from a gameplay standpoint, I don't think anything pulls off strategy quite in the same way that Transistor does. Because you have to constantly be thinking about it. And that can be a little bit overwhelming at times, but once you really get into the groove of how Transistor plays and what you should be prioritizing and not prioritizing, it there's just so much fun to be had. I played it on PC when it first released, and it is easily one of my favorite games of all time.
Yeah, and for under $5, you're definitely getting a great, great game for that.
Yeah. The Switch version has as touch controls as well, so you can, draw out your paths, which is sort of an important thing in Transistor. It's easily the best console version of it.
Awesome. And then finally, for me, is The Walking Dead. All seasons are currently $5.70 or $5.75-ish, which is 75% off. So you could get, each season for $15, $16 at this point. And they're all really, really great games. Obviously, the first one came out around 2012, and they've gotten sequels, a couple of years on top of each other after that. Sensational games, really great stories. But be aware that they are quite heavy if you haven't played them before. They can get pretty, pretty sad.
Yeah.
But very good stuff.
You're the one making the choices to make it sad. So
that's right.
It weighs on your heart pretty heavily at times.
It's all your fault.
That's right. Yeah, they will remember that. All right. Now, finally, we'll get into the release forecast. Not a whole lot coming, but still some interest there. Still some interesting games there if you're looking for something new. On June 5th, which was a couple of days ago, we had Clubhouse. Sorry, we had. Was it, what is it in Australia? 51
Worldwide
Classics. 51
Worldwide Games, which is just a worldwide silly games, name.
There
but, yeah.
There we go. Yeah. So as the title says, 51 various board games, card games, all kinds of stuff like that. Look for our review on the site. The Outer Worlds as well. So that was that came out last year around October-ish. Sort of like a Fallout Lite. In that it's made by Obsidian, the same people who made Fallout New Vegas. First person sort of RPG set in space is sort of an interesting story. Wasn't my cup of tea. I know some people really, really enjoyed it, though. What about you guys? Did you guys particularly enjoy The Outer Worlds?
I got really I was pushed away sort of by the gameplay. It's really not my thing, but I did watch my sister play through it on PS4. And it does have some really interesting themes that I think it does a really good job of conveying. So if you're really interested in storytelling in game, like in games, like this could be worthwhile for you. But I would certainly read a review of the Switch version and maybe check out Game Explain's video as well, because it's certainly not what we would all expect from a port of the game.
What about you, Chris? Did you enjoy, or did you play The Outer Worlds?
I played about 10 hours, thanks to it being on Game Pass, and thought, oh yeah, this is pretty cool. I haven't touched it since and have no desire to go back.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, it is a bit of an acquired taste. Then we have, before the next podcast, on June 19, Burnout Paradise Remastered, which is a remaster of the 2008 Burnout game. Not quite sure how this one runs or anything like that. Do we have someone who's going to be reviewing this?
I imagine we will have someone reviewing it. I'm not sure if we've started on it yet, but like it we'll try to get a review out, definitely.
I'm very curious to know how well the online will run for this one, because this one, while you can play it single player, like it did have a very strong focus on online in that, like, you know, you have friends on your friends list whose sort of avatars you come across, and you kind of slam them in the middle of a race or something like that, and you're constantly challenging each other, and there's like leaderboards and things like that.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see how well connected this one will be on the Switch. From that, be sure to head to Vux.net to catch up on all things news and reviews of Nintendo. As we mentioned, look out for our 51 Worldwide Games review, plus any other review that we've mentioned, the 2K Games, Chris's XCOM 2 collection review, my Bioshock collection review. Is someone doing...
Yes, game? Somebody is doing the Borderlands Hands of Jack collection, so that should be coming out in the next week or so as well. The 2K kind of just dropped all three of these games on us at once, so...
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, so in the meantime, have a great and safe couple of weeks, and hopefully we'll be back next time with a whole bunch of news when there are some announcements or something happening. Let's keep our fingers crossed. Thanks, Chris, and thanks, Ollie. We'll see you next fortnight. Bye-bye.